Certainly. Are we discussing the mechanics of intimacy?
Dean chuckled at the pre-dark word.
I know what goes where. I've seen a lot on my travels with Rona, my mother.
The boy sat up in bed, hugging his knees.
I mean, how did Jack ask the barmaid, and how did he know she liked him, and...
I see. You wish to know the answer to the ultimate question. A question that has a thousand answers and no answers. How did Mr. Lauren know? He did not know. He simply asked.
But...
Let me explain. There is a classic tale from pre-dark days of an ordinary man who stood in the middle of Times Square, part of a huge ville in its day, and to every woman who passed by, he asked if she would like to copulate with him.
Do what?
Have sex.
Really? Some fool tried that with Christy or Mildred and they'd get a chair busted over the head. Or worse.
Indeed. As did this fellow. He got slapped, punched, kicked, stabbed, shot, and copulated.
There was a minute of silence from the other side of the room.
So, it's a random sort of a shotgun thing. You keep asking until one says yes, and with any luck, she's good folks.
Doc nodded at his pupil.
Wise enough for this night, young Master Corder. Understand?
Dean chewed that over.
Not really.
Me neither.
Doc laughed, and turning down the wick, he killed the lantern.
How, my dear Emily, will the sweet Laurie ever succumbed to my dubious charms, I shall never understand. But if you do figure out the mystery of the ages, please be so kind as to inform the rest of mankind, won't you?
Sure. No prob.
On the cold streets of the ville, two figures moved through the darkness to the creek that washed through a sluice gate and into the quarry below. One man kept careful watch as the other tossed in a plastic bottle.
Sure they'll understand?
The man bared a broken-toothed grin.
Of course they will. Only dumbass four-eyes learn reading and such. We send them a bottle with a sheet of paper means one thing, bottle with a feather means another, and like that. Who needs writing?
But you stuff this one full of leaves. What does that mean?
The Ville Secman watched as the bobbing bottle quickly floated along the turbulent creek and vanished out of sight into the Stygian night.
Revenge.
With the coming of the dawn, the companions met in the dining room of the inn and broke fast with toasted acorn bread, wild honey, and bacon. Mildred inspected the bacon carefully before allowing any of them to eat the meat. Nowadays, undercooked ham in any form could give a person trichinosis, which meant a horrible death, eaten alive by the microscopic worms. Feeling brave that morning, Doc dared to venture a cup of the cook's homemade coffee and ruefully agreed with the rest of the ville. It looked like coffee and smelled similar, and there the resemblance abruptly ended. They were just finishing their second helping when a blast of cold air swept the room, and Stephen walked into view from around the damaged plywood buffer. This day the fat man was dressed in tanned leather clothes, rough and durable, and rawhide boots, with none of the fancy trimmings of the previous day. A sleek long blaster was slung across his back, and a coiled bullwhip dangled from his left side. Canvas gloves were tucked into the front of his belt, a dark wool hat on his head. As he drained his cup of sassafras tea, Ryan's opinion of the man went up a notch. At least he was dressed for travel today, and not like a baron's jester.
Good morning.
Stephen strode to their table.
The sun is up, so let's get moving. I want to reach the lake before nightfall so we can avoid camping on the open road.
Half expected Monty to be with you.
J.B. brushed the crumbs off his shirt. Stephen stole a slice of bread, dipped it into the bowl of cloudy honey, and took a bite.
Crazy bastard woke me before dawn.
The man sure doesn't like you.
Mildred rose carefully, keeping most of her weight on the crutch.
Might be wise to find another bill.
Can't.
Stephen stuffed the rest of the acorn bread into his full mouth. He swallowed most of it unchewed.
I have to live here. Married his sister.
Ah, my condolences.
The fat man shrugged and stole a drink from a cold cup of tea.
Let's get moving.
Ryan turned from the table in disgust. The caravan owner ate like a pig. The one-eyed man lifted his backpack and rifle in one hand.
The sooner we start, the earlier we arrive.
The rest of the companions gathered their belongings and started out, but a voice called for Jack. He turned and saw Lily rushing over. She kissed him on the cheek, pressing a cloth bundle into his hand.
Lil said to give you this in case you left before she got back.
Jack weighed the package in his palm.
Heavy. What is?
A fifth of shine. The good stuff. So you'll think of us with every sip and not forget too quickly.
He pulled the woman close in a crushing hug and kissed her deeply.
Whew. Won't forget. Ever.
Releasing her, he tucked the bottle into a pocket and buttoned the flap closed tight. Digging in another pocket of the fatigues, he unearthed a similar bundle.
Yeah.
He pushed it into her hands. Smiling slightly, Lily untied the knot. Inside the square of cloth were a dozen 22-caliber rounds, perfect for the Derringer.
Oh, Jack, we can't accept this. It's a fortune in ammo. Here.
He folded his hand over hers.
Keep, and think of me. Gift, not payment.
I understand.
Lily smiled and kissed him again, this time long and hard on the lips.
Goodbye.
Jack lifted his satchel of supplies onto his shoulder.
Good journey.
And she turned her back on him to start clearing the table. As he walked from the building, Jack had the oddest feeling that he would be seeing them again soon, but under terrible circumstances. Irritably, he shook off the notion as nonsense. He was no doomy, able to see the future. Probably just missing them already. Twins. What a night that had been. Outside, the morning was damp and chilly, and Jack spied the others were already past the sandbag nest of the Ville. Shifting into a run, he hurried along to catch them, the pocket of his jacket sloshing softly with every step. Stephen gestured toward a large, splintery barn near the front gate.
Wags are in there. I hired a boy to stay awake for the night and start the engines once an hour to keep them from seizing in the cold. Pretty smart.
The unlit stub of a cigar jutted from the corner of J.B.'s mouth. The tiny nubbin was his last, and the armorer wasn't going to light the tobacco until he found more. Shouldn't be too hard. This was Virginia.
I have done this many times before.
So have we.
Standing on a corner near a brick building, Monty watched them walk by, four of his armed sec men flanking him on both sides. Wearing a bright red jacket, the squat man resembled a fireplug to Dean, but the boy wisely refrained from making that comment aloud. Doc paused for a second in the street.
RCMP!
He snapped an odd palm-out salute to the security chief, and Monty reluctantly returned the gesture.
What was that about?
RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Doc twirled his sword stick.
Also known as the Mounties. His family must have wandered down here during the long winter.
The great-grandson of a pre-dark cop. No wonder Monty is such a good sec chief. It's in his blood.
Undoing a padlock, which squeaked in protest, Stephen opened the long door of the barn and threw it wide. Hurrying inside, the companions followed. Empty horse corrals lined both sides of the structure, with a giant stack of hay at the rear of the building, and parked in the middle area were four pre-dark vehicles standing side by side, forming a tight square. Stephen gave a small can of food to a boy who immediately bolted outdoors with the prize as the companions inspected the wags.
A self-heat. You pay pretty good.
Have to. He's a cousin.
The front vehicles were large industrial trucks, flatbeds with wooden side rails festooned with bulging canvas sandbags, making them mobile forts. Behind the trucks were two rust-streaked vans with solid sides, no windows, with large